You're listening to Friday Podcast from the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program. In today's episode, Wilson Center Senior Fellow David Balton speaks with Dr. Sylvia Earle. An oceanographer, marine biologist, explorer, and author, Dr. Earle has been a pioneer for marine ecosystem research. She was the first female chief scientist of NOAA and was Time Magazine's first hero for the planet in 1988. Today, she continues to inspire with her efforts to develop a global network of areas that safeguard the living systems that provide the foundation for life on our planet.
So, Sylvia, welcome to the Wilson Center.
Great to be here. Good to see you.
Thanks very much. Today, we will have an event here at the Woodrow Wilson Center focused on the ocean and the need to protect it, particularly using marine protected areas. You've been working on ocean issues for a very long time. How did your fascination with the ocean begin?
It's pretty simple. I got knocked over by a wave when I was a little kid. The ocean got my attention, but it's life in the ocean that keeps me engaged. It's a living ocean. It's not just rocks and water out there. I learned that at an early age. It was just irresistible. Still is.
So you began exploring ocean space decades ago. What has changed over that time? What do we know now that we didn't know when you started?
We've learned more about the ocean and why it matters to everyone, everywhere, every breath we take, every drop of water we drink. Well, more, I guess, since the middle of the 20th century than, I think you could make a case for saying, than during all preceding history, because the technology that came into play, not just scuba, although that has helped us at least spend some time under the sea on a level that was not possible before, and really in the sea. I mean, all those explorers on the Challenger expedition or back to Charles Darwin, they did not have even a face mask, let alone a submarine. Today, we're beginning to engage technologies that will enable humans to experience the ocean as well as to deploy an incredibly growing array of sensors and devices to map the ocean. It's still a very big deal, mapping the ocean.
Yeah.
We've got better maps of the moon and Mars and Jupiter than we do of our own planet. And more than that, it's the life in the ocean. It's the diversity, the abundance. I think sometimes of the limitations of why don't people care about the ocean? Most people see it from the surface, if they see it at all.
Yeah.
The idea that that's where most of the action that shapes planetary processes, that's what keeps us alive. No ocean, no life.
So on that, I've heard you describe the ocean as the world's life support system, also as the World Bank. What did you mean by that?
Well, I gave a talk at the World Bank a while ago, and I had a picture of Earth from space and pointed to it and said, there it is, the World Bank. That's where everything is that keeps us alive. It's where whatever it is that we think of as our economy, our security, our health, our prosperity, life on Earth, in a universe that is really not very friendly. And the margin of error that we live within this very narrow set of circumstances, whether it's the power of the sun and the protection that we get from the Earth's magnetic field, the distance from the sun that is not too hot, not too cold, just right. The fact that we have an ocean, a liquid, there's plenty of water in the solar system and the universe beyond. But most of it's frozen or as a gas. Here, we have a liquid ocean. But most importantly, it's filled with life. And as far as we know, this is the only planet with life. And even if there is life elsewhere, having a planet that is suitable for us has taken a very long time,
Yeah. Like
4.5 billion years. It's taken us about 4.5 decades to significantly unravel, deplete, modify those precious systems that really have little margin of error.
So one reason we are holding the event today here at the Wilson Center that we are is because the ocean faces some significant challenges right now. In your view, what are the biggest challenges we need to confront?
Ignorance. Number one, people don't know, even though we know more now than ever before. And the children of today have access to knowledge that even Einstein could not have. He left us in 55, and no one had been to the moon by then. No one had been to the deepest part of the ocean at that time. So we are the luckiest people ever to arrive because of the knowledge we have that we could not have before the present time. But at the same time, it's like a race. We're losing more at the same time that we're learning more. The biggest threats other than ignorance, you know, if you were some evil alien wishing to change the earth so that humans could not live here, I'd look at the temperature. I'd change the temperature, and I make it pretty fast. I'd do it, you know, a few decades instead of over thousands of years. I'd change the temperature. I'd change the chemistry. Huh? Well, we're doing that to the air. We're certainly doing that to the ocean with acidification and all the toxins and an avalanche of plastic and many things. But most importantly, perhaps, I would really go after the natural systems. I would take apart the coral reefs, the rainforests. I would diminish the diversity of life that shape the chemistry, that generate most of the oxygen. The oxygen comes from living systems and captures the carbon and makes the planet habitable for humans. So here we are. We're changing the chemistry, we're changing the temperature, and we're slaughtering the wildlife, especially in the ocean, on a scale that is unprecedented. Industrial killing of ocean wildlife. It took us 10,000 years or so to demolish many of the large and slow and tasty animals that Ed Wilson talks about, our impact over thousands of years on the land. Ed Wilson, great, thoughtful ant man and scholar at Harvard University, who really holds out optimism for humankind if we exercise what we now know to be so and take it seriously and not just think of protecting nature as an optional thing, but rather as our highest priority. If we fail to stabilize the way the natural systems function, I mean, biogeochemistry, we should learn that in the first grade, the basic nature of the earth,
right,
and respect it and do whatever we can to protect it, because if we don't, nothing else matters.
So I was involved in an effort to create the world's largest marine protected area. It's in the ocean around Antarctica, a special place.
Hallelujah.
And there are proposals to establish some new marine protected areas around Antarctica. We'll hear about those this afternoon.
Yes.
Why are these measures beneficial, in your view?
What I find baffling, in light of what we now know about the nature of the world, the precarious place, the miracle that Earth exists at all, and what it takes to hold the planet steady, the diversity of life, maintaining temperature within a range that is hospitable for us, keeping the chemistry of the planet within safe limits. We know this, and yet, perversely, we still have this, we're burdened with habits that are born of a time when we did not know that. We have policies that were born when we thought that the ocean was too big to fail.
Right.
And those policies, those even laws, are still on the books that insist that it's okay to extract large quantities of wildlife from the ocean. And it's okay to continue to do many things that are legal, even though they are really threatening our existence. So one thing in a stroke that we know works on the land as well as in the sea is to embrace critical natural areas that are still in pretty good shape,
yeah,
and do everything we can to keep them in good condition. And those places that have been in some way depleted or damaged, to do what we can to give nature a break, to try to restore those areas. The waters around Antarctica have already been affected by human activity. The days of whaling, going back to the 1800s, 1900s, and on into, well, during a time that still goes on to some extent.
Yeah.
And the taking of krill, knowing what we know about how systems function, the carbon cycle, the oxygen cycle, the food webs in the ocean, you'd think that we would say every krill matters more alive in the ocean than one that we can extract and squeeze the oil out of it or use it to feed wildlife or cultivated animals for us to eat, or the salmon that are fed ground up krill, or whatever other purposes we put these wild animals to. Their highest value to us is doing what they do naturally. But doing what we can, while we can, to embrace as much as we can of Antarctica makes a lot of sense, especially when you realize the waters around Antarctica are technically a global commons. And the few nations that are extracting from the global commons around Antarctica are taking disproportionately from that which essentially, if anybody owns it, we all do. And yet we have put into place policies, laws,
yes,
habits that enable us right now to allow extraction to continue. But it makes sense to at least identify some of the most critical areas and embrace them with care. That's not a lot to ask. In fact, I think we're asking too little.
What would you like to say to tomorrow's child about the ocean and our efforts to protect it?
I would love to hear what tomorrow's child has to say about our behavior today. I can imagine them looking at how we treat the land, the air, the water, wild animals everywhere, trees, and asking us, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Because you know what it takes to have a planet work in our favor, in a universe of unfriendly options, and yet you act as if you're living 10,000 years ago, looking at every living thing as a product, as something to be turned into something, quotes, useful, trees, board feet of lumber, whales, barrels of oil, pounds of meat, fish, tuna, whatever they are, just as products. Now we know. Yeah, you know now, early in the 21st century. They may say, thank you for turning things around while there still was time. I hope that's what their message is, because as never before, we have an opportunity, and maybe as never again. I heard the president of Chile, Sebastian Piñera. I had the opportunity to go with him to Antarctica in January of this year. And he said, we are of the first generation to know what the problems are, and we're the last generation to be able to do something about it. So that's our challenge, to be able to do what we can while we can, so that tomorrow's child will be, will salute us instead of condemning us.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk, and I look forward to hearing more from you this afternoon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Friday Podcast from the Environmental Change and Security Program. For more information, follow us on Twitter at New Security Beat and visit newsecuritybeat.org.